The imperial government continued to maintain a bureaucracy. It had an ambitious building program in the 10th and 11th centuries. We'll discuss that with the upcoming cultural lecture. That stimulated the building industry, bricks, quarrying of stone, timber, all of these consumables being brought into Constantinople, feeding a very, very active urban market. And it always should be remembered, even though the tradition of bathing continued in the Byzantine world and the sanitary conditions in Constantinople were probably better than Western European cities, that in Constantinople and provincial Byzantine cities, the attrition rate in urban population was high. There was a constant death toll due to disease, to some extent due to crime, the living conditions. So you were constantly drawing people off the countryside. And those cities, therefore, acted as a safety valve from overpopulation, drew in excess population, and employed it as labor in the great city. So there's this constant interplay between Constantinople and her hinterland. And at the time of 1050, for instance, some would go so far as argue that the population of Constantinople may have been approaching a million again. That is, the numbers it had been in late antiquity, a considerable advance over what it had been during the so-called Dark Age. Imperial demands to maintain army, imperial efforts to trade exotic goods like silk, finished products, relics to the Western European markets, all of those help stimulate the Byzantine economy. And there is now very good archaeological and numismatic evidence, especially in the Balkans and regions such as Bulgaria and Serbia, where we can see the effect of this Byzantine economic change, where you can start, say, approximately 850 AD, and carry the record up to, well, up until the sack of Constantinople in 1204 and beyond. And there is a major revival in town life, in the use of coins and monetized markets across the Balkans. And this is associated with two aspects of that imperial economy. One was the imposition of peace by the Macedonian emperors, that you had a single government, you had a legal system, you had order, that trade could proceed. And second, all these stimuli of which I spoke, of towns, of imperial military and fiscal institutions, stimulating economic change and growth. And this, in turn, affected the agriculture and the rural economy, which responded. So I think there's very little doubt that before 1071, that the Byzantine economy, prosperity in the Byzantine Empire, was at a new high. And you would probably have to go back into the 6th century get the same type of levels that you had in the 11th century, that there had been substantial progress made in the Byzantine world. Well, if that's true, what happened when the Turkmen, the Seljuk Turks, overran Asia Minor in the 1070s and 1080s, and then the Crusaders showing up in large numbers? And both of these groups are looked upon as extremely destructive to imperial prosperity. And there's some truth to that. The initial Turkish conquest was clearly destructive. There's reports of massacres in cities. There are indications, especially from the Western Chronicles, that during the First Crusade, the cisterns, the highways, the bridge infrastructure had broken down in Asia Minor. There was one point where the First Crusade actually gets lost because the Greek guides aren't quite sure where the roads ran, and they ended up taking an unfortunate detour for several days. And there was a drop in population. We don't know by how much, but clearly Greeks and Armenians were driven out of Asia Minor, or they were killed, they were enslaved. Turkmens moved in and began to take over the Anatolian plateau. But once that initial conquest was over in the 12th century, you have to balance this picture. On the one hand, the imperial government was quite distressed that it had lost access to central Anatolia, that is, the stock-raising areas. That was important for horses, war horses, hides, salted meat, vital to the imperial armies. It also disrupted contact to certain mines and timber areas. So from an imperial viewpoint, war materiel, recruits formerly available from Asia Minor were no longer available after the 1070s. On the other hand, in some ways, the Turkmen arrivals, the immigrants, and in this case, the Turks settled in considerable numbers, and by one estimate, maybe as many as 500,000 Turkmen moved into the plateau of Asia Minor in the 11th and early 12th centuries. and began to transform the actual structure of the population there. But they succeeded to the stock-raising traditions. They very quickly adapted their pattern from Central Asia. And in Cappadocia, that is in central Turkey, we can see a symbiosis emerge almost immediately between Christian agriculturists practicing traditional agriculture and even planting vineyards in the riverine valleys of Cappadocia, places like the Peristrema or the Solon Ala Dere, which are homes to all those painted churches.